So, hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby, and I will be joined by various members of the EV Cafe crew every week. And this week, JC John Curtis. Welcome, JC.
Hello, darlings. Are you all well? We are having a ball and loving the takeaway. I'll leave it to you, Paul. Go for it.
Well, we've got the amazing privilege of getting to know and understand some of the wonderful pioneers, innovators, and collaborators of our industry. Today, no different. An innovator, a collaborator, a pioneer, Craig Hibbert. Welcome, Craig.
Welcome. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's genuinely our pleasure. So, Craig, obviously you are, well, I guess, Managing Director of EV Civils and Easy Blocks.
And,
you know, businesses focused on that sort of driving down the carbon emissions of civil work. 22 years in civil works. Got a number of companies, a bit of a business entrepreneur, but really seems like trying to solve problems for the industry, which is brilliant. And of course, a sponsor of the EV Cafe. I mean, that's the heady heights, right, Craig?
100%.
So, mate, first things first, tell us a little bit about EV Civils, and I suppose I think you should probably build in a bit about Easy Blocks too.
I had a former civil engineering company of probably about 6 years that was born out of the work I used to do, infrastructure work on the motorways. I worked on the motorways for a number of years and basically sold my life to the motorways of working away and not being with your family for years. And then various things happened in my life and I decided to stop working away so much, probably because I was due to get married and I had no life. But my wife, well, she wasn't my wife at the time, got pregnant, and yeah, it was time not to miss another kid growing up, basically. So yeah, I came home and yeah, worked and built a company from scratch, from, you know, a relatively small company up to a really reasonable size company. I think we had 82 employees at one point with numerous sites up and down the country running. And life was pretty good. And then unfortunately, COVID hit and I had to lay off about 40 lads overnight, which was not the most, or the biggest low point in my life, really, to be honest with you. It was a really difficult thing to do because a lot of the lads, although they say don't mix business and pleasure, the people who you spend so much time with, more than you do your own family half the time, is when you're at work. So it's you grow fond of people and you build relationships with them, especially, you know, whether it be a working relationship or friends, let's say. So yeah, you know, and there was a lot of good lads. But born out off the back of that is a company that I have called Find Any Worker. There's four of us who have it. I decided I couldn't go it alone, and it was Chris Carpenter, my partner's business partner. It was his initial idea. He was like, look, you know, we've got all these guys here, we should be, how can we advertise them, basically? And we started looking, and, you know, obviously you've got your websites like Indeed and various other things which are just CV sites, basically, and you know, you put your CV on there and you hope to get a job, or you send a CV out. So we come up with this idea of everyone has a profile for everything in life these days. There was various things going on in life, like guys losing their jobs who've worked in a factory for 40 years and they've never written a CV in their life. And we sort of incorporated it all and thought, well, you know, if you have a Facebook profile, you could have a Find Any Worker profile. And then we thought, well, yeah, it should be like a bit like Auto Trader for jobs. So we started looking at various ways of incorporating it. And basically, you know, that's what we now have. We have a product that we've done a soft launch on, and we're doing the official launch in the coming weeks. It's been a good few years in the making, not through any real fault of our own. It tends to come down to tech and IT and trying to get the website to do what we want it to do, to be honest with you. That's it, basically. It's a self-profiling website. We hope to build the world's biggest database of workers. You know, the idea is that you can be anywhere in the world and you can use this website to obtain work. You know, you build your profile, you set your profile to actively looking for work, and we will actively notify companies that you're looking for work. So you don't have to send your CV. They can log on. They'll get a notification to say you're looking for a job in their line of work. You know, it could be a site manager on a building site, or you know, somebody who owns a hotel in hospitality and is a chef or whatever. And then the person who's wanting to employ someone will go to look at their profile and basically build the best picture of them. You know, there's a short video you can put on there. There's various things. It's one of them things you think you've heard it before, because it's such a good idea that I don't get why nobody ever has done it. But, you know, hey, here we are. And, it's a massive idea.
Yeah, so and what about EV Civils and Easy Blocks? The two companies, I mean, you know, under the name of EV Civils, you currently sponsor us as the EV Cafe. It's really exciting what you're doing in that space as well.
Yeah, sorry, that was me off on a tangent. Yes, so as I say, I went from working on the motorways to working at home, and worked for a number of years to build up a company that subsequently, unfortunately, we had to I had to let it go more than anything. It was the case. I let it go for nowhere near what I would have liked to have, and had I done it 12 months before, then I'd have cashed in. But you know, hey ho, such is life. But what came out of it was learning to diversify and look at other industries and things within civils and in infrastructure. And I knew of a company not so far away from where we're based who was doing some work for, dare I say, BP Pulse. And the guy who was doing the electrical work on it is somebody I'd partnered up with before doing a parking eye contract, installing the... This is where you get loads of hate mail for saying the AMPR cameras on the car park. Everybody hates parking eye. So as I say, and I contacted him, and there was various things happened, and we were sort of pushing, and we couldn't seem to crack this EV installation thing. You know, BP Pulse wouldn't talk to us. Nobody would really speak to us, because at the time, there's still a couple of years ago, it wasn't like it is now. The grants weren't there, the rollout wasn't there. It was still just still in the early phases of commercial installations, really. You know, the odd commercial charger here, there. It wasn't nowhere near on the scale that it is. And then it was actually a friend of mine who owns a traffic management company came to pick my brains to try and further his company, saying, look, you know, can you give me some connections and contacts? And then he turned around and said, oh, actually, we've been doing some work for a company up in Scotland called Envivo, but I don't understand why they're working all the way down here and they're not using anyone local. So off the back of that, we got a contact number, and that was the start of our journey, really. I think our second EV contract, our second lot of EV work came through Sarah Sloman, who contacted us on behalf of Elmtronics at the time, hence how we've come to meet you guys, you know, and obviously... You know, the lovely service. So, yeah, all good.
What is it that's different about EV Civils? What do you do differently than, you know, because what is I know that you aim for net zero. I know nobody's there yet for an installation, but what is it you do differently?
So I think a continuation of the story, really. We was looking around whilst we was carrying out the works, and we was looking as exactly what it is that we're doing in the processes that we're going through to install the chargers. And we were saying, well, there's nothing clean about what we're actually doing here, you know, the way that we're doing things, because there was no options available in order to try and, as we regularly say, clean up the dirty side of the industry. You know, the vans are still running on diesel, the still saws and whacker plates and trench rammers are all still running on petrol, you know, and it's, a lot of it came down to technology, battery life, you know, as we all know. We started to explore that. And then coming back to my time on the motorways, we used to work with these lean management companies who'd come and work on behalf of the likes of Balfour Beatty and big companies and look at ways of saving money. How many times has that wagon gone to pick up spoil from that site? Why couldn't it have been done once, because they had to go all the way to one junction, all the way one back? Why is this guy driving around all day? You know, why are you going to the yard to pick up bits that you could have took out in the morning? And it's all come down to sort of prior planning. And that's a big part of lean management. And the more I looked at it, I thought, well, surely that reduces your carbon footprint if you're only doing something once. And then sort of further developed, really. So fast forward to where we are now, you know, and obviously you guys know what we're doing with regards to trying to partner up with certain electrical companies, you know, and I question it. Why can't we do a full electric install when we're working in an EV industry? Okay, and again, a lot of it came down to technology. Fast forward a couple of years to where we are now, times have changed massively. You know, technology is evolving and changing every day, all the time. So, you know, we're still not quite there, but we are. I've seen videos of electric installs being done, but, you know, they've not got the vans there. You know, obviously with the launch of the Iveco eDaily, it's just a massive industry-changing thing when you can tow an electric excavator or a normal excavator, any type of excavator. You know, to have towing capacity and working utilities, you can't do it without it. It's impossible. You know, especially if you've got more than one site to visit, if you're going working away or whatever, you know, the jobs aren't on your doorstep. I'd love to be putting 100 chargers in outside the window because it'd be dead easy and, you know, you walk outside and come. But it's not like that, is it? It's not like factory work. So you need that vehicle there. You know, the wagons are coming on massive. Times have changed a hell of a lot. And then obviously we started to look at the materials involved and, you know, obviously where the materials are coming from. And then that brings us on to obviously the EZ block. And it was a precast concrete based solution for a pedestal to sit on. You know, it was needed in the industry. Obviously, there are competitors on the market, but nobody's doing it with the carbon credentials in mind. So when we sort of got to talking to the concrete company, and you know, we're having conversations with Anderton and saying, okay, well, you can do this for us, but you know, what about the carbon credentials? And we started to look into them and their drive, and you know, them and Ibstock are. They're very, very sustainable. The mindset, I mean, they just built a net zero brick factory in the south of England. So they're all about trying to reduce include sustainability and reduce the carbon footprint in the construction processes.
Craig,
from the start,
tell me why you care. Because the easiest thing in the world to do, you had a civils company, the easiest thing in the world to do is to continue to do standard civils work, just like everybody else does. But there's something about you which says, no, that's not good enough. I want to do more. Why is that?
Well, mostly from an educational thing. I think, you know... I want to try and be a pioneer in the industry and sort of fly a flag and lead the way and educate people around us. And as I said before, you know, you've got, I was having a conversation before the show and we're saying about the likes of Keyline and them. And, you know, when all the big companies have got it in mind, a lot of them have got decarbonisation departments. That's all good and well. But the man sat at home who is watching TV of an evening and he goes out and he digs a hole the next day isn't necessarily thinking about that. He's only thinking about getting paid. So it's about educating people and showing them that even the way they plan their day can have an effect on the environment, not just the products that they're using. And it's about changing our processes. People in general in life are very wasteful. You know, it's very easy to throw something away and buy a new one and start again. You know, fixing old things or planning their day, planning their travel to work, you know, five men getting in one van and going to a job rather than three cars and a van, just little things like that. And I know it might sound pathetic, but I mean, and you say, why do I care? Well, I've got four kids. That's why I care. You know, I think that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. It's about looking after the planet that we all live on and share together and educating other people. So if we can, I think education is a massive word in sustainability and reducing our carbon footprint in general, really.
Thank you.
People don't know.
Sorry, my mic was muted. There you go. We even do it on podcasts.
Amateur.
So I'm so sorry. I had noise in the background, so there we go. I'm sure we can either leave it in or choose to edit it out. That'll be fun.
Let's leave it in.
But Craig, it honestly, it's great to see where you care. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of that sort of legacy bit about thinking about our kids and, you know, and trying to clean up the environment. But what I suppose, you know, this is why you do what you do. What does success mean? actually look like for you? So fast forward another 2 years, another 4 years. What does success look like for Craig Hibbert and for EV Civils and Easy Blocks?
Success would be probably fast forward 9 years, and I will have a farm in the south of France that will be fully sustainable. I'll be drinking locally sourced wine that's also made in a sustainable way, locally sourced cheese, doing fire cooking outside where the sun shines most days, and entertaining people, really. I like, you know, it's, yeah, that's the goal and the dream, is to have a bed and breakfast with, you know, the wife doing her yoga barn thing, and yeah, we've got a goal and a dream, and that's what success looks like to me.
Well, and that's a beautiful thing.
No bills, Paul. That's the goal. No bills. Fully sustainable.
But thinking about what does the business look like that you would leave behind? What's somebody going to buy from you that's going to enable that? What does that successful business look like? What have they done? What have they achieved?
At present, we're not at stalemate. We are in a position where organically we have gone as far as we can go. We're obviously, you know, we're looking at the moment for a first round of investment, either an angel investor or somebody to come in and work with us, alongside us, who shares my thoughts and goals and dreams, really, who's forward focused, not just about making money and putting charges in the ground, but, you know, doing a good job of it along the way, and obviously with the environment in mind. So, yeah, I think in the next 12 months, I'd like to basically double our client base, obviously find an angel investor, somebody to come in and work alongside me to help me, me and Chris, and the rest of the guys, just to build, let's build something together. And we want to be the number one EV civils company in the country, you know, and being as innovative as possible as well. I want to get to a point where we've got enough work and enough clients who are working with us because of our carbon credentials, not just because we're cheap. You know, it's not a case of money's not an object, or it's not a case of that. We're always priced around middle of the market. What we want to do is stay priced around middle of the market, but obviously doing full electric installs. So, net zero is... it's not achievable, definitely not in civils. It's a massive thing, you know. Obviously, ESG is starting to play a big part in the way that any industry works, really, these days. You know, not just in construction, but as we've said again, you know, cleaning up the dirty side of the industry, the civil side of things is really difficult. If you can start to look at it with a magnifying glass, and it just gives you a headache, because, you know, down to quarrying stone and how it's transported and how far it's been transported for, and it is a real difficult task, but I've said to you, Paul, all the time, almost net zero is achievable. You know, we can do a fully electric install by August this year. We'll have an electric vehicle that can tow an electric excavator with electric tools, and we will be able to do a full electric install. So yeah, the future looks full electric to me. You know, everything. And you know, I've stripped the company back to the bare bones so I can decarbonize it, so that everything we do moving forward now is done with sustainability and our carbon footprint in mind.
And that's a beautiful thing. That's what success really looks like for almost any business. And I love the fact that even though, you know, maybe it's difficult or it's not quite possible.
Bloody suicide to, is what it is.
Yeah. but it's not quite possible to achieve absolute net zero, but it's not going to stop you trying. And it's important to focus on what you can control and you can reduce. And so that's really great. John, I know you've got a question.
Come hell or high water, I will get there.
Because I think, Craig, you're somebody who's clearly very innovative. You think in a way which is, I could do this, I could do that. What about this? How about that? You're constantly looking for better ways of doing things. Have you had an influence in your life which has helped you become who you are today, that very energetic thinker who wants to just do better?
I think the energetic side, I think we'll put that down to ADHD probably. I think this is maybe the more personal side of things, really, isn't it? And it's in my life, there's life was difficult in when I was very young, and I think the biggest influence in my life has been my nan and granddad. You know, my granddad's unfortunately currently in hospital. He's not so clever. He's fully there in his head, but he got taken in with pneumonia the other week, and you know, I went to see him yesterday, and even now he's still very upbeat in the way that he is, and he's not a negative man. He's very forward thinking. He always has been. You know, they made sure that my nan and granddad and my mum and dad. You know, my nan's 89. Kurt, my granddad, loves him very much. You know, it's brings a tear to your eye to see how they are when they kiss and say they love each other. Even now, they had their 70th wedding anniversary not so long ago.
Holy smoke, 70 years!
70 years is unreal. So yeah, influences in my life. Yeah, wow. I think it's got to be them too. 100%. You know, because my nan's very old fashioned. She's had two letters off. Well. When she was alive, the Queen, she obviously can't get a letter off her now, but yeah, they've had for their wedding anniversaries, and you know, it's yeah, they still believe in the old way, and I talked to my granddad, who's a car enthusiast. You know, he's obsessive about Bugattis, and he's trying to talk to him about electric vehicles. He's I don't know, how can I say it without swearing, like trying to plat something. You're not having it at all. He's just like, no.
You're like that as well, and I'm the same. We both still, despite the fact that we see the benefit of EVs, we still love cars.
Yeah, I love
all
cars.
Types. Yeah. Yeah. Talk to us about your car history. What have you had, and what have you got now?
Oh God, here we go. I've had a Aston Martin. Vantage, I've had Maserati, I've had a couple of Range Rovers, I've still got a Range Rover on the drive at home, a V8 one, and I'm still driving around in an Audi Q7. I absolutely love the Q7 S-Line. It's a great big bus, and it's got seven seats and all the rest of it. Yeah, I've had all sorts of cars. I've had an Audi RS3. I was a Volkswagen enthusiast for years. My first car was a Golf. It was a GTI 8 valve, and then from there onwards, yeah, I've had various Golfs, R32s, and other toys that they either hurt you or they get you in a lot of trouble.
This is a thing.
Yeah, I've had various cars.
This is a constant with people in this industry, that a lot of us who have gone to the light side, if you like, of EV, absolutely passionate petrol heads.
Yeah,
I'm
getting a Tesla on Thursday, so the Audi's finally going. But it's that thing of, for everyone, is a transition. It's if you've got a car that's on lease, or you've bought it through finance, or you've done it however you've decided to purchase the car, it's not as simple as just giving it back. So if at the time, you know, a couple of years ago, you've just got a new car and you've got into the EV industry, it's almost like you feel like you're gonna you turn up on site, and everyone turns up in electric cars and little vans, and you turn up in this diesel guzzling Audi Q7 3, and it's like, yeah, it's a really nice car, but it's not electric. But you know, I sort of park it round the corner out of the way and walk round, and they're like, oh, have you walked to site today? No, I've just hid my car around the corner. I think, to be honest with you, I had a Maserati Gran Turismo S not so long ago. Beautiful. And it was just a lovely car. You know, Ferrari engine, went like stink, sounded amazing. My Aston Martin used to want to kill me most times I got in it, but that was maybe me. As I say, I've had various cars throughout the years, and absolutely love cars. I like motorbikes as well, but I'm not allowed them. I'm not wired up properly. Obviously, you guys have met me enough times now. I've got a scar on my eyebrow and a bit of discolouring on the side of my head, and that was, fun on the motorbike that didn't end so fun.
I think that's something that we share, is not being wired up correctly. Paul,
like this speaker.
So I'm so glad that John, you said, you shouted my name, because I'd fallen asleep with all this talk of cars.
Paul, I've actually had loads of vans. At one point, I think we had about 14 vans actually, and wagon.
Were they converted? Did you do conversions on them and put livery on them and beacons on the top and tow bars?
Yes. Yeah, full chapter 8, Paul. Full chapter 8.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you see, yeah, for those of you out there, that is not a part of a book. But anyway, there we go. So, Craig, look, you know, life has been good for you recently. I mean, it sounds that, you know, I've heard some challenges through both our conversations off of here today, but also through you've alluded to some times in life where you maybe have had to dig pretty deep. Can you talk to us about a time in life that you have had to dig really deep, that's been troublesome for you, and how it's kind of played out today?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this to both you and John in conversation when we spoke personally. It's like, I'd never change anything in life that I've ever done, because I'm quite happy with the way I am today. But it's taken a lot to get from where I was to where I am. You know, I was a mischievous young man, let's say. And, you know, although I had a good childhood, it was quite turbulent. You know, my mum and dad split when I was 6 and my brother was 4. You know, we were nearly taken into the care system, and there was various other things. My nan and granddad pretty much, well, they say, I won't say they saved our life, but they saved us, you know, and they showed us, they made sure that they took us on holiday every year. It might be to Pontins or Haven or wherever, but, you know, they showed us a way of life that we would have never seen otherwise. You know, even my granddad was a product of the war, and his mum left him in the hospital and somebody else took him on. He doesn't even know who his real parents are. But back in them days, people give kids up, and it's just a, I don't know, it seems like a real alien concept these days, but that's the way things were back then. I mean, fast forward again to having to lay all them lads off, but obviously that's taught me and taught the people around me, especially Chris, to look outside the box. And, you know, me and Chris together had to dig really deep, and we've had to dig really deep many a time recently. You know, there's been plenty of times last year when things we could have easily packed it up and gone and worked at McDonald's as it is, you know, because life can be tough at times. And obviously we overachieved in our first year as an EV company. You know, we made contacts very quick. Me and Chris are very good at probing away to get what we want. I generally always get what I want one way or another. I'm just that sort of person. I'm very persistent and, you know, hardworking and keep my head down and just driven and motivated. But I think still that the time I had to dig really deep was definitely COVID. You know, the first part of COVID, because of the BT infrastructure work that we was doing at the time, it was sort of COVID proof or recession proof or whatever you want to say, you know, whatever it is, because the show must go on with that sort of work. They had a goal and you was working outside, but to have to lay 40 lads off overnight, they were lads that was working. I had them out in labour working for other, and that's not slave labour, by the way. It's not that sort of thing. I'm not farming out people. It's there is with other construction companies, and everybody sort of seen their arse in it in the construction industry, because no one knew what was going to go up and what was going to happen. Were the building sites going to be shut down? Were they going to be allowed to carry on building? Who'd have thought that we would have had the housing boom that we had, and it actually worked in its favour, and, you know, massive. I mean, the house prices have flown up. They've been building houses for fun. But initially it wasn't like that. You know, the lads went off fishing and sitting at home and deciding. And when I tried to get them back, it was like, well, I've got my free money off the government, so why do I need to come back to work? I live with my mum. Or I live with, you know, and that guy was 60 and he still lived with his mum. No, I'm joking. There was lads who still lived with their mum, and they just didn't, they wasn't interested. And then what happened as a result is why work through me when they can just ring the company up they was working for through me and get more money? And it was a real hard pill to swallow, because the labour element was, it didn't carry any overheads. It didn't need to provide vans. The guys got themselves to work. They went, they did the job, and they went home and put my invoice in. And that was it, done. And it was paid on 7 days. And it was a good time in life for that reason, because it was that regular money every 7 days. It was massively missed, because fast forward to the Indian variant hitting, you know, and I had a decent number of gangs out there doing the infrastructure work. And nobody, the government in this country, didn't think that BT Openreach outsourced most of their work to India, to Indian call centres where the estimates are approved. And I had gangs of lads sat there, and I may as well have been sat there setting fire to money, because the promise of work was always there, but the work was never coming. You know, and I had a piling contract doing work with Roger Bullivant, which was fine. And without that, I'd have had real problems. It kept us going through times that were really difficult, really difficult. You know, it put a lot of strain on my home life. It put a lot of strain on you know, on me and my wife. And, you know, it's made me, it's like I've almost had to lose everything to appreciate everything in a way, because I fell into having my own business almost, because just because of my mindset and the way I was of working on the motorways. And it took a guy, Big Phil, and he said, "Why are you going back working at home?" I said, "Because I can earn more money on my doorstep. Why am I working away from home? My missus is pregnant, various, this, that, and the other." And he was like, "Well, if you stay working with us and the guys who are with you, they'll just work for you instead of working all for..." And I thought, well, that's not a bad thought, really. So they were really good times, because it was, again, it was just putting guys to work, and it was good. But fast forward, the thing that I'd built and spent 6 years really grafting away and building a company to, you know, from, and being able to come off the tools was a massive turning point as well. Although I love getting back on the tools now, but the lads at work will tell you otherwise. They don't want me on the tools.
So
that's it, really.
You and I share some very common ground from our upbringing, and you know, having had, I spent time in care and of the local authority, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on as we're younger and as we're growing up that can be quite challenging and can shape how we are. And as we get older, I know that it kind of breeds that resilience. How did you, because I mean, you're a resilient man. I'm hearing all of that in all of these things. There's a lot of resilience coming through. You bounce back. What do you think has given you that resilience?
Really thick skin.
Really thick skin and?
I think you gain thick skin through life, don't you, and through various things. What's given that resilience? I don't know. I think it's just a fighting spirit that I've had bred in me from day dot. If I'd have started giving up at a young age, then I might not be here now, I think, really. You know, it's. I know you talk a lot about mental health, and obviously these things that happen throughout your life do have an effect on your mental health. There's times when you sit there and you think, why did that happen to me in my life? What the hell did I do to deserve that? You know, and there's no given answer for it. And then you think, well, yeah, but you know what? I'm still here now, and that's obviously that resilience and that, well, no, okay, dust yourself off. Let's keep going. Let's see what's around the next corner, because you never know. It might be a bloody big polar bear waiting to eat you, but it might not be. You just don't know. And with me, I'll be the first to stick my head around and have a look. Trust me, if there's a gang of us, when we're kids, it was like, oh, there's a gang coming down the road. I'd be the first to go, that's all right, I'll go and check it out.
Craig, you're a real open book, aren't you? You're somebody who wears your heart on your sleeve, and you just call it as you see it. What are you most proud of in your life? Is it that being that open, caring, hardworking person, or is there something else that you're really proud of that you've achieved?
I don't know, really. It's a really good question. What am I proud that I've achieved? I think I never thought I would. I think with the life I had as a child, I always looked at having a family as a bad thing in a way for years. I don't know if that makes sense or not. I always sort of said I'd never get married as well, because I'd sort of seen my mum and dad and how they were and what happened with them when I was young, and you know, and it was always like, well, I don't really want to go down that road if that's the end result. And it's only as you get older and you learn that life doesn't have to be like that. And then you actually start to think, well, no, do you know what? I am going to do that. And I'm going to make damn sure that my kids don't go through what I had to go through. So I'm going to dig down, I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to give them as many holidays as I can a year. I'm going to make sure that they don't want for clothes, they don't want for trainers, they have everything that they have. You know, and as my ex missus will tell you, my two oldest kids are with, you know, she looks at it like it's a bad thing, spoiling kids, and that treats should be love. But for me, if they ring me up and say, I want a new pair of trainers, I don't even question it. You know, it's there for them. I want them to have everything. That it's not that I didn't have it. It was a big ask for me to get the best trainers or the best of this. You know, it was, my nan and granddad weren't wealthy people, you know, but what they didn't have in money, they had in love and time and affection and everything else that came with it.
That's the key. Because yeah. You talked about that. You said, I came off the motorways because I wanted to be at home. And the key thing that I think kids want is your time. And that's the thing you've crafted into all of this. I suppose it's not really about the stuff, is it? It's about you, the man.
You know, Chris said something to me not long ago, Chris Carpenter, and he said, I said to him, I said, what do you want from this job? And he sort of sat and scratched his head and then came back to me. And he was, you know, I said, do you want more money? Do you want this? And he said, no. He said, money's not important to me. He said, time is. So, you know, working a four-day week is more important than getting paid an extra 10 grand a year. Because of that time, because time is precious, as we all know, you know.
Yeah.
Talking about my nan and granddad being married for 70 years, you know, and everything is just unreal. That's how precious time is to them. And I said to my nan yesterday when I went, so I took her to the hospital, and dare I say it, I was like, you know, how long do you think my granddad's got left? And she just said, don't even talk to me about it. She said, it just makes me depressed. I thought, yeah, I shouldn't have really said that, should I? But that's me all over. Probably falling it too. If I'm not 1 foot, both feet in it. But yeah, that's right, John.
So with all of that in mind, Craig, look, I mean, you've got to whatever age you are. We won't embarrass you by pointing out your age.
Well, I'm younger than you two, so I think we just...
yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, 41, right. You've got to 41. You've got your kids. You've got you know, your wife and your life as it is today, and you've got here the way that you've got here. But what would you have told your 15-year-old you, your 12-year-old you, your 17-year-old you? What would you have told that person in order to get you here in a better way? Or easier, maybe.
Yeah, probably an easier way. I don't know. Is there an easier way? I'm a strong believer in, you know, say what you want, that the national curriculum is a load of rubbish. It's not it's so outdated, and it doesn't teach you. I think at a talk, I think people aren't taught well enough unless they have. Again, it comes back to this parents thing. About respect and how to manage money. You know, they don't teach you about mortgages, and they don't teach you about money management in school, and they don't teach you. I've wasted an awful lot of money in my life, but I've also travelled a lot and I've been to a lot of places. So, again, I don't know. I quite like how I've lived my life, although most people don't really agree with it who are close to me, because they'll say, well, I spent years travelling, and I lived in Newquay for years in the summers and went away travelling in the winter, and you know, I've done most of Asia, and I've been, you know, even me and my ex-partner, we took my eldest daughter when she was three to the Philippines for 5 months. Most people have gone, what, you did what? But we rented a house on a beach, and you know, we had Christmas there, and I actually saved a Filipino kid who couldn't swim from drowning on bloody Christmas morning because they were all on the beach. It's like, just, and the, Do you know, the parents didn't even say thank you. It was like, I think they were trying to get rid of it. To me, that's living, and that's living, and that's life. And
it's, so let's pick that up. That's life. How would somebody describe your life in 50 years' time? Looking back, what would they say about Craig?
Turbulent and deathifying. No, that's
we'll take that. Turbulent, deathifying. There you go.
There you go. The stunt. That's my stunt double. How would they? definitely interesting, exciting, testing, trying. I don't know. God. there's too many words, I think, to list. But yeah, there's nothing normal about me, that's for sure. It's not a, I'm definitely not a 9-to-5 man. I think I'd really struggle working for somebody. Well, I definitely would. I've always had a bit of an issue with authority and being told what to do. But again, I think that goes back to my childhood. If my nan and granddad say jump, I say how high. If anybody else says it, I say a swear word. So,
Craig, who would play you in a film of your life? So an actor. God. Who would do that?
God.
I've got one for you.
Oh God! Who would I like to play me? Probably Leonardo DiCaprio. Who would actually play me? Would probably somebody like John Cleese or somebody. So,
go on, John. Who were you going to say?
Either Danny Dyer.
Oh really?
Or Johnny Depp.
Yeah,
I'd
Johnny
love
Depp.
To see Johnny Depp play you.
I'll take
amazing.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, amazing.
I've often said I'd like to write a book. I think it, although I'd have to be really, I'd have to get a lot of permissions off a lot of people to write a book. I'd have cup cases coming out of my ears and my arse. You can't say that, you can't. No, I didn't do that with you. Yeah, you bloody did.
Oh, gosh. Craig, it is always a pleasure getting some time with you, and it's been really great to see a bit of the man and also what you as a man have produced in these companies, this focus, this passion, this energy, this drive to see, you know, to see you leave your mark on this world in a positive way, not a negative way, to reduce that footprint, that carbon footprint in everything that you're doing. It's great to, I mean, I'm loving your nan and your granddad. I wish all the health in the world to your granddad, and may he have many more years, and may your nan and granddad may you many more years of marriage together. I mean, it is quite a phenomenal thing, and I'm so pleased that you've had that wonderful influence on your life.
That's massive. And obviously, because I've played, obviously, a massive part in their lives, you know, and obviously, I think my nan said at one point, I think I keep pharmaceutical companies in business with all the paracetamols they need to have to give everyone a bloody headache. But it's, yeah, it's very, very true. I'm my mum. I feel really bad, actually, because I've not spoke about my mum and dad, and it's... you know, equally, I owe a lot to my dad, and you know, it was tough in the early days for him. But yeah, it was tough on everybody. But you know, that's such his life, and it's the way it is. Yeah, wow. It's what doesn't break you makes you stronger. So that's it. But I do have a mum and dad. I do love them very much, even though I've not spoke about them. But yeah, it's a conversation I don't really want to get into.
Can we just send our best to your granddad?
Thank you.
And hope all goes well. We're all thinking of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Fingers crossed. To be fair, he's had scans and checks, and there's no clots, there's nothing on his lung. He struggles with COPD. He swears it's the fags they used to give him when he was in the army, the free fags they used to give out. Probably some truth in it, to be honest with you.
Probably.
Yeah, my granddad was a drayman for years, and they're actually from Birmingham, mate. My dad's side of the family, from Sutton Coldfield and Perry Bar and around there. So when he was kids, every Easter we all used to go and stay with my nan's sister, and it was I've got fond memories of that. And my nan's sister in the war was shipped out to Hereford, and basically didn't come back to her own family because she liked the family she'd been sent to that much that she stayed with them. I'd be made up if I was there. That's the right choice, because they ended up with this wonderful farm on this hillside in Hereford that was absolutely stunning. So my fondest childhood memories are going there at Easter when the lambs and the calves are out, and it was, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
And they had these mental geese that used to peck and attack the car. They were better than guard dogs. They were horrible. Oh, they were horrible, honestly, horrible bubbles. To this day, I don't like geese.
Oh, well, on that beautiful image of holidays in our childhood and calves and lambs and nasty geese, Craig, it's been fantastic to talk with you today. So thrilled about the businesses that you've got there with EV Civils and Easy Blocks. I know that they're going to make a difference and really help.
Huh? See, I'm finding work.
Yes, of course.
Findanyworker.com.
All of these really designed to make an impact both on people and places. And
yes,
that's what we like. So if you need EV or civils for your EV installations, definitely Craig and Chris at EV Civils, reach out to these guys. They can help you with the operation, but also in the lean management element of everything that they do as well. So, Craig, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Cheers, guys.
It's our pleasure. And if you want to get more information about EV Civils, get onto the EV Cafe website. You can click a link there to their website. And also continue to follow this wonderful podcast where we get to talk to the wonderful people of the EV and sustainability industry. John, thanks for your time today.
Paul, can I just say, and our website is www.ezblock.co.uk. The EV Civils website is currently under construction. Reconfigure it, whatever you want to put it. To the fact that our old website was obviously focused at standard installations, and we are now focused on reduced carbon installations, or at least working towards them.
Fantastic. John, last words?
Just, you are a piece of work, my friend, and you will always go far.
Not so bad yourself, John.
You will never go without a sandwich. I know that because every time...
No, I've got
every
shoplifting, that's why.
Every call I've done with you, I think in the entirety of the time I've known you, which is years, you're eating something. Yet you don't look like a house.
I train hard when I come to train. It's really funny you're saying this, because this is what Chris and Jamie's just come back. He's been looking at some sites and he's just turned up there. That was who I went, go. And he says, every time I speak to you, you're eating. But I've lost a lot of weight though. If you remember, I used to be bigger than I am now. I lost 2 stone.
Done well, mate.
Cheers, achievements, buddy. Galore. Achievements galore.
Good for the mind, body, and soul.
It is. Craig Gibbett, thanks so much. Everybody, check out the EV Cafe LinkedIn page. Check out the website. You can find information about EV Easy Blocks, everything, more podcasts. Join us next time for the EV Cafe Takeaway. Craig, now stop talking for a minute.
Paul, do you not think I've done really well? Usually I cannot shut up. I'm a rabbit. Yeah. I've been quite calm. I've spoke slowly, calmly, and collectively. Until the last 10 minutes, I've got to be excited.
Can't wait to see the comments on this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, good. Oh, as long as they're all good comments.
They will be good comments. We'll delete the bad ones.
Being honest, honesty is good. Constructive criticism.
Yeah, I like it.
Good man. Right. That's a wrap, everybody. See you next time.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
See you, mate.